today's isthmus. The picture is all of us standing by the...
No, I didn't look at it.
Yeah.
The 20 years ago today.
I'll go home and look at the website and see. Look at it.
The 20 years ago today is all of us standing at the statue.
That's so great. Yeah. I'll have to go home and look at it online.
Yep.
Man.
Yeah, this handmade Moroccan chocolate and orange sauce. It kills.
Oh my god. It's so delicious. You mean a little sugar comb over here while you're talking?
Well. Starting in the middle 80s,
mm-hmm.
there was a very strong, chiefly lesbian, but feminist effort to change the legal status of the judgment of pornography.
Uh-huh.
Andrea Dworkin, the writer. Such an unpleasant one. And Catherine McKinnon, who was, she had a diamantine mind and a personality to match. And she had argued the first sex discrimination case in front of the Supreme Court. And established sex discrimination as an offense category and protected status. She's something else as a legal mind. And the two of them had been working together to come up with an a posteriori definition of what was obscene, what would be the combination of sexual explicitness and violence,
mm-hmm.
rather than no, a priori, excuse me, because the Miller test, the standard test for I know it when I see it,
mm-hmm.
Is a posteriori, because you have to see it,
right?
Some authority has to judge it to be obscene. And so much sexual imagery that's just sexual imagery is considered obscene, but non-sexually explicit violent images in a sexualized context aren't banned.
Mm-hmm.
And so they came up with this whole new legal approach, brilliant legal approach. And McKinnon saw it as a way to extend her successful case for sexual harassment as a subclass of sex discrimination. And so they were working on this. And they were working on it mostly in Cambridge, out east. And I saw a news article about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, damn, this might really be the reason I was elected. I could do this. Because I love sex, but I hate sexualized violence,
mm-hmm.
both in its imagery and what the imagery then inculcates, but also in that so many of the participants in those images are not volunteers.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And are not giving informed consent. So I hooked up with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we put together a conference, and we brought McKinnon and Dworkin here to Madison, and Iris Christensen, who was just, she'd been with Battered Women, I think. She's an attorney now in, of some regard, but I think she might have just been just entering law school at that time. So we were working with her and her group, you know, the group against violence against women. And I was really working the political fields to get other sponsors, because this was quite divisive. I mean, for instance, Dick Wagner and I were super tight. I was his lieutenant. He's chair of the county board, and he did not support this.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really the first time I was ever a part of a fission between lesbian activism and gay male activism, because I've never been a sexual separatist.
Right.
But there were a whole lot of men who were very angry with me. And a lot of gay men saying, you know, in these days of the plague, the safest sex we can have may very well be images, blah blah blah. So it was a hot time. And I was going ahead to work on this bill, and it was in drafting for a city ordinance. And Nightline got wind of it. A window of the conference. And
mm-hmm.
So they sent out Deborah Leff. She was the second string interviewer for Nightline.
Mm-hmm.
Jeb, whomever, was the first string. I can't recall. But they sent her out. And obviously the expectation was that the interviews for Nightline would be with the exciting principals, Dworkin and McKinnon, but Leff really, to the extent that a news person can be in favor of something, Leff was really quite intrigued with this,
mm-hmm.
and wanted to give it a positive face, and Dworkin and McKinnon are not positive faces. And there I am, little cutie. So she glommed down to me, so that's how I came to be the feature of Nightline.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And so the Nightline is being broadcast. I got a phone call, and Dick Wagner, though he didn't like what I was doing, was nonetheless in my house that night because we were close. To see the broadcast, because it isn't every day that some, you know, chick from Madison is the star of Nightline. And the phone rings, and my girlfriend at the time answered the phone saying, hey, we're kind of watching Nightline. And the caller says in, you know, the dulcet upper-class English tones, I knew we're watching it here overseas, and I'm so-and-so. And I'm a don at Cambridge, and I would really like to talk to her. And so Becky said, okay, this one I think you should take. And for the next 3 months, my life was Alice down the rabbit hole. Various people called and purported to be people they were not. And all of the people they purported to be were important persons. Kathy Whitburn, the female mayor of Houston.
Mm-hmm.
Some they purported. So I got a phone call from a person who purported to be her chief aide, saying they were very interested in this legal approach. Could they schedule an appointment, and the mayor would like to talk to me, you know, on that appointment. And so, you know, by this time I'm really freaking out. And I say, well, I'm sorry, but I know this is going to sound a little strange, but I really need to call you back to be sure you are who you say you are. Yeah, I call back, and I get, you know, someone saying, mayor's office, city of Houston, you know, da 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 da.
Mm-hmm.
And we were expecting, I mean, I set up a whole meeting with a lot of prominent people in this town to meet this woman who purported to be a don at law, and I had done due diligence to establish, indeed, there was a female don of laws in that college in England, and that she was in fact famous for her civil and feminist-based legal writings.
Mm-hmm.
And so I set up a whole meeting for people to meet her and talk with her. And of course, she never showed up. And then my mail started going missing.
What?
And then they assigned a... an agent, an FBI agent, Neil Purtell, to me, because he had been the lead agent, looked just like Columbo, it was just a cartoon character, but he had been the lead agent on the big pornography, the capital of pornographic publication in the Ohio case. He'd cracked the case on mail frauds, and this guy who was the capo was in jail, and there had been a bombing, there had been a car bombing. Let me tell you, when an FBI agent says to you, "And what kind of car you drive?" and you say, "Well, I don't drive," and they say, "Good, that,
oh my God,
that will make your sphincter clutch up."
Jesus.
And I came home one day, my young girlfriend, whose youngest girlfriend ever been involved in poor thing, and that was just way too much for her. I mean, this was so scary. I cannot emphasize how disorienting, how frightening, how much damage it was going to do, it did to me politically, because people thought I was nuts, because I had a sheriff's deputy assigned to guard me.
Uh-huh.
Because it's the sheriff's office responsibility to make sure the county office holders are reasonably safe, and Sharon Levinsky was a lesbian deputy sheriff and my friend, and so she was fine with the assignment to follow me around. And then I've got an FBI agent named Neil Purtell, and my post is going with you. You can close the door, dear.
Okay.
My post
with
is
all the ice cream, I think.
Yeah. My post is going missing, and I came in one day, and the work I had been doing, the drafting work and research work I had been doing on the legal position, was in a path. It had been moved off my desk and laid in small piles along the floor.
Oh, my God.
To make it amply clear that's how easy it was to get in my house. And then just about the same time, the feminist women's legal clinic in St. Paul was fired on. There was a drive-by shooting into the office. No one was injured, but it was definitely the office. They were working on the same thing, because St. Paul had just passed this ordinance. And I was so scared and so freaked out. I had been invited. I didn't know it because my post was stolen. I had been invited to speak at the Women in the Law conference,
mm-hmm.
the position on this. I didn't know it. And I saw, a good friend who was quite on the fence, a lesbian feminist who was quite on the fence on this position, it's not ACLU. Most of this time when I did show up to debate and there was somebody there to debate, it was a feminist from West Cullen Weston Pines and Bach. It was Cheryl Weston. And so I never got the invitation, and so I just got reamed out for failing to show up at what was then. I mean, the Women in the Law Conference used to be the big feminist law event of each year. I didn't know I was invited, so I skunked the panel. And it was getting more and more surreal, because there's somebody who purported to be a professor at Harvard, Kathy Whitman, and Texas is the mayor, this woman claiming whose name was for real, but it wasn't her. I called England. I finally got through after explaining myself 1,000 times. I got through, and she said, "I'm sorry. I have no idea what you're talking about. I would not be interested in American civil law because American civil law and English civil law are really quite different. And mm-hmm. the whole legal approach in tortious law is really not very comparable. So, I mean, just on that basis, no one from England would ever really be interested in this. And then one day somebody from MNI newspapers showed up on my doorstep with a box of stuff, and they wanted me to read it and tell them whether I thought that this, the stuff that was in the box, would be covered by the ordinance I was drafting. Yeah, I was like, oh, fuck you very much. And some of the phone calls, I mean, I cannot tell you how detailed they were. I was... When someone called and said they were calling from the Justice Department, they knew Carla Dubinsky. I mean, Carla had been my friend in the earliest Dyke days, in the early 70s, and she was indeed at DOJ. But Carla's name hadn't gone out of my lips in 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, they, you know, this was someone absolutely giving Carla's name as a bona fides for me to believe that I should talk to them. And then the Indianapolis City Council passed a bastardization that conflated current Miller test obscenity with this legal approach, completely vitiating the legal approach, because Indianapolis City Council is quite conservative, and the woman who was the sponsor there is some kind of pew jumper. And the ACLU rushed that result into the circuit court.
Mm.
And Indianapolis is in the same circuit we're in. And the circuit court, I think we're in the seventh, the circuit court said that it was not legal. And overturned the Indianapolis city law. And that took the stuffing out of it, because it had been hard enough for me to get anyone who was willing to sponsor. For instance, Stu Levitan was willing to be a sponsor. But once we realized, you know, that now we would be going against a ruling in the binding circuit, the legal costs, because surely that was going to go on mm-hmm. appeal as well, the legal costs were really significant. And I was so frightened. So I never went any further with it. And what they believe was that the guy who was in prison from the Ohio pornography ring case was the many times removed through dummy corporations, shell corporations, owner of Red Letter News.
Mm.
And Red Letter News was on the last corner of the last street of my district. And that's how they were keeping an eye on me.
Wow.
And if you want to verify parts and pieces of this, you can talk to Rebecca Burns, who's a senior social worker at Wiseman Center. She was my girlfriend then. And Dick Wagner, who, though he opposed what I was doing, was in the house on the day I got the phone call from this woman convincingly purporting to be a don at law.
Well, I just... That's just crazy.
Yeah. It went on for months.
How did... So when you eventually dropped... When you stopped pursuing this, then... Did it stop, or?
I got some communiques about I better not think about it again. I mean, I got untraceable mail. And as I said, I mean, I had an FBI agent watching out on me. Nice guy.
Holy crap.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
Maximum holy crap. So that took the stuffing out of me for a few months.
Right. God. It's a testament to you that it didn't take all of the stuffing out for it. Like, I mean, that's just a...
And that's,
I just can't.
And really, Jason, it's this is the short version of what the, I mean, I'm not even giving you details and stuff that happened. But it was surreal. It was living in Dolly's melted clock world. I'd go somewhere where I thought I was supposed to speak because I'd gotten an invitation. It'd be a closed hall, and a car would come shooting out of the dark in the parking lot and then turn the lights on just as it got up on me. I mean, it was absolutely murder mystery quality life for quite a few months. And again, you can verify most of this. So I was single at this point because my partner, when I was first elected, had left me because I didn't have any time for her. Mm-hmm. She apologized for that years later. And, you know, I mean, I was nattering earlier socially about, you know, women who were trying to make partner in their law firm, trying to make partner in their accounting firm, and, you know, they thought of themselves as being out, but mm-hmm. there I am on Nightline and in the New York Times and in various pictures all over the place. So I'd been single for quite a while, and Jonathan Becker took over Jim Amundsen's term of office for the county board. And both Dick Magner and I thought he was a gay man. And so Dick told me to take him under my wing because Jonathan is a very brilliant lawyer and an excellent Robert Jules of order. Very skillful at the orders of the house, and you really can, if you're really good, you can really control the movement of bills and activity in an elective house if you're really good with rules of order. And so Jonathan and I hung out all the time together because we were such good friends. And, you know, you get into this world where, you know, there's not very many people who care about what happens with the county board. And you're up until 1 o'clock in the morning every first and third Thursday, for God's sakes. And so we'd go back to Jonathan. We'd drag other people from the Liberal Caucus and go back to Jonathan's apartment and make everybody dinner in the middle of the morning. You know, we'd be making dinner at midnight and 1 a.m. for a bunch of grown-ups. And so we were very, very, very good friends. And at some point, I thought to myself, geez, if he was a girl, I would have jumped him a year ago. And so we're driving along on Mineral Point. And I said, would you like to have sex with me? And he went through the red light. Back. And he started making these whimpering sounds. I don't think about you that way. I mean, like you're a famous lesbian. And I thought that was very dear. And so it's like, okay, that's fine. It was just an idea. And so some months roll by, and he comes back and said, I've turned it over in my mind. I think it couldn't be a bad thing. I'm like, okay, I used to be good at it. Fine. I don't think I can tell you this part. Because he's a public figure, and he would not consent to me telling him the next part. Okay, so I'll skip over the next part. And so somebody catches, it's not unlike the story I was telling you earlier socially about Donna. Uh-huh. As in, I don't know who concluded that because we hung out together all the time, we were having sex. But because we really weren't. But I've got reporters everywhere. I literally had a reporter staking out my apartment on North Patterson Street I lived in the house with Will Handy, the founder of Madison Eats Support Network, and Will and I had been, you know, friends since we were way younger than you, and so we're living in this house, and it's like queer central for the unfashionable side of the isthmus. I do breakfast is just an open, every Sunday I did an open breakfast for anybody who wanted to come in and talk to us, so we had wonderful Sunday breakfast.
That sounds great.
Oh, it was just delightful. We also had a kangaroo, actually, a wallaby. We did. We had a wallaby.
We had a wallaby.
We had a wallaby in a lavender cat harness. I used to take it for hops in Reynolds Park. And so we had a reporter staked out in front of my house trying to prove that I was not sleeping in my district. And this hit me on my same last nerve that got me to say to Nurse Square Tits when I was 19 years old, well, I guess I am a lesbian then. You know, if the answer is you're going to fire me if I tell you I am, well, then I guess I am. And, you know, so it's, for me, it was the same, it was on my same last nerve of, you know, here's, only in Madison could it be a scandal for a single man and a single woman to be involved with each other. And so I'm thinking, oh, crap, I really need to tell Dick Wagner because I'm his lieutenant and I'm loyal to him. And so after a county board meeting, because by this time Jonathan and I decided we were going to have a kid. And I certainly love him. I mean, even though I'm furiously mad at him about our son at this point, I do love him. And so I'm thinking, you know, I gotta come clean to Wagner. He needs to know what's going on. I don't want him caught up short. It's not good politically. So I say, Dick, after board, come over to my house. There's something I need to tell you. And so Jonathan came over as well, and so I tell Wagner, and he dropped me like a rock. From that moment on, I was persona non grata. Mm. And that just got my back up even more. You know, spend my whole goddamn life bleeding out of my eye teeth for the movement. That the whole point is tolerance, and you love who you love, and yeah. And Jonathan and I did decide that we wanted to have a kid. And Jonathan had been looking into single parent adoption. I never expected to be anybody's mother, but so we conclude, okay, we're gonna have a kid, and yeah, we should get married. Yeah, Jonathan's a lawyer, and it's like we should get married, and that'll set up a legal structure for the kid. And the newspapers were all over us. And this isn't voicemail. This is the days of, you know, phone recorders. And I would come home every night to my district, I'll have you know. And my phone messages would be, you know, I would have filled up the tape. And there were just so many vile. We never thought you were a real lesbian. You never looked like a real lesbian. How can you do this? You know, don't you know this is fodder for all the people who think this is a phase? And for the people who, almost all women, for the lesbians who left their name, I'd go back and I'd look at my campaign contribution list and say, bitch, did you ever give me a dime? Don't remember you dropping any lit for me. And so I promised Marv Blusick, who was then the lead reporter for the State Journal and a really good guy. He'd given me a lot of good ink on important political things, particularly in disabilities, for which I am justifiably highly regarded. He'd given me a lot of ink. And so, you know, I went to Blusick and said, okay, I'll give you an exclusive if you can keep everybody else off us. Because we're going to go, and we're going to get married at the temple. And I don't want reporters there. Mm-hmm. So we did this way too cute interview. um, And, you know, and I was about six months pregnant when we got married. You know, it was like one of the very few times ever that we had intercourse. I did manage to get pregnant. It was the evening of the day I was leaving for the National Association of Counties conference. So I know it was July 14th at 6 p.m.
I'm sure future people will love to know exactly the moment.
Bastille Day. That's why I always drink champagne on Bastille Day. And so one of us, since I did want to live together once we had the kid, one of us needed to move because we had district issues, and I had cashiered my political base by, you know, having at least one visible evidence of having at least one incident of intercourse with a man. And, you know, and it was tough because I was shortlisted. I was the first or second name on everybody's lips to be the state assembly person for that district. But by cashiering my political base, that was the end of it. So I figured, what the hell? You know, I'd had four terms on the board, and Jonathan had two. And he hadn't done anything, you know, it hadn't negatively affected his political base. And it worked. I mean, he went on to become the county board chairman in the next term. And then we bought a house, you know, a couple blocks away from where we're speaking today. And, it was one of the high ironies of my life that I was sent to Coventry for having a sexual relationship with a man that was not sexual. And I have never liked being hung for a sheep when he's yet a lamb. And so essentially we concluded that this just didn't work for him. He wasn't into me in any way. And that, you know, so we'd sort of, I did good research and, you know, met with a family therapist to look at the developmental stages when it would be least damaging to my son, for us to break up households. And there's not a lot of research, certainly was not 10 years ago, on, you know, what the developmental issues are when one parent is gay. It seemed to be largely that they concluded that if you get past 6 months of infancy, then just developmentally you have to get to an age when the kid understands time enough to know, today I'm with mom, today, you know, 2 days mm-hmm. I'll be with dad. And then on the gay and lesbian issue, you really should dissolve the relationship before the kids are really starting to think of themselves in terms of attraction and partnering. So that was the plan. And I'm the president of the PTA for the racially paired school, Midvale Lincoln. And so there I am, president of PTA. And I was sent in, the school board member, who lived close to Midvale, Deborah Lawson, had a lackluster first term, and the teachers union was concerned about whether they should back her again. And so I got a phone call asking me, since I lived in the district and was the president of the PTA, would I go to her campaign meeting and you know, see if she could be improved upon. And part of the concern was that her sister was running her campaign. So I went over to her house, and her sister came around the corner, and it was a coup de foudre. But I'm an old political war horse, so I threw myself main force into the campaign, but I did not go after the sister during the campaign.
I commend your restraint.
Yes, well, no. and nothing if not an excellent political wife. And so after the campaign was over, and the campaign was quite successful, then I went after the sister. I went after Melissa big time. And she though, again, you know, it's like, what do you mean you're not a lesbian? You know, it's like saying you're not a spotted cow, girl. But she'd never been out. I mean, she hadn't had a relationship in 8 years because she didn't think her sister would approve. Another one of those Madison liberals that has issues when it's in their family. And it was you know, a passionate and extraordinarily rocky relationship. And through me, Melissa started to meet all sort of the A-list political lesbians. And she's, you know, I mean, she, Melissa's quite successful now as a political consultant. She runs Kathleen Falk's campaigns. But we finally broke up. I did something I never, no one else, you know, usually I will just absolutely struggle to the end. And then when it's over, it's just over. Mm-hmm. But with her, you know, I can't tell you how many times we broke up and got back together again. It was not pretty. And so then I went back into hiding. You know, I was working, obviously I was working campaigns. I can't help myself. And, yeah, I'm a true junkie. And somebody persuaded Alex Olson, the cop. I assume he'd be interviewing Alex and Martha. Somebody persuaded Alex to run for school board. Mm-hmm. And Alex is a Gold Shield detective. And the people who persuaded her to do it were not, none of them were gay. And they just really didn't know how to do that campaign. And so at some point, somebody called me and said, will you come in and really take over Alex's campaign? And so we did. I mean, we lost, but we were running against a fairly entrenched, closeted lesbian. And we got a good percentage. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that put things back on a different political landscape and then really got me back in the fray. And then Nikki Baumblatt, who was staff at Outreach, was told, go and find Kathleen Nichols. It was like, seek out Yoda. Because she can tell you about the founding of the United. Mm-hmm. 30 years ago. She might have clippings. Mm. And so Nikki materialized, and, you know, I guess I treated her a great deal like I treat you. I fed her and talked to her. And then, so they said, you know, Nikki and her partner, Chris, said, oh my God, Kathleen's got to get the speech about this. So I gave a very funny speech. On the 30th, and then I got back on the outreach board, and then the nation's first gay rights law, our 25th anniversary, was coming up, and so we did a big event, and it was really wonderful because Jonathan Berry, the first county executive of Dane County, who was in the state assembly when our law passed, and Rick Berg, who was in the state, David Berg, Rick Berg was a local, Dave Berg, and Tom Loftus, who went on to, he's in the ambassadorial corps now, he was ambassador, I think, under Carter and Clinton, and so, and Mitch Miller, may her memory be a blessing. You know, so all these people who had been in the Senate or the Assembly when we passed the nation's first gay rights law all showed up. I mean, it was really a night of stars. And one after another, they said things like, I know I voted on a lot of things, and I know a lot of them were fairly important at the time, but I can remember voting on this. I know that by voting in favor of the nation's first gay rights law, I was voting to begin the energy that has changed this country. Mm. And, you know, these were all straight guys saying this, one right after another.
That must have been so great.
And David Clarenbach, of course, got the lion's share of the attention, as he should get, because he, too, got sent to Coventry because, you know, he got involved with Heidi Nass. Ironically, Steve Nass, the asshole right-winger's sister. And so David got sent to Coventry. That's why he did poorly in his congressional race. But that night, everybody suddenly realized it was a great mental unity, great emotional unity of, man, we did it here, and we did it 25 years ago, and all these people now in their 60s and 70s who voted yes on the nation's first gay rights law, and many who have gone on to far greater political office, you know, they all remember with a flossy-haired, glossy-eyed sensibility of what they felt like in voting for us.
Yeah, I wish I had a tape of that night for everything, you know.
Somebody did.
Oh, well, maybe I'll have Troy see if he can get in contact with.
I do believe we videoed it.
Because I mean, that should certainly go in.
Oh, it's marvelous, and it was well covered. I mean, Kenosha News covered it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a fairly big deal. It was NPR talked about it. We got goo gobs of press swing. You know, we were on every morning talk show in serving the central Wisconsin. Great radio play. And you know, what can I say? I remain a political junkie. I'm not on the outreach board now. I stepped off for a personal reason.
Mm-hmm.
But I may again be a part of a first time event.
I have a feeling you will be.
So that's my story, dear.
Thank you for sharing it with. Because today I was, you know, yesterday and today I was going over your old, our last talk, and just, you know, like, so, like, you know, that interview in and of itself is like such a timeline of stuff that went on here. So
yeah, I'm trying to think what else. Because I told you about the getting arrested, right?
Yeah.
I told you
yeah.
about getting arrested.
You certainly told me about getting arrested.
Yeah, because I showed you the stuff in the hall. And
mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, there's all kinds of small things. I mean, when we put through domestic partner recognition in the county, and we got AIDS programming supported by the county. I mean, there's no subtracting. You know, there's no substitute for a seat at the table. You know, there's no question that Kyle Richmond is, you know, the present holder of the out seat, as it were, and and that, you know, it's he's now stands in a long tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And he served that tradition very well by getting the domestic partners insurance there. Bless the boy. Mm-hmm. Yes, I was nattering earlier about the today's isthmus has the picture of 20 years ago today. That's the picture of Dick and Jim McFarlane and Ricky and Gonzalez and me and Tammy and Earl Brooker with the George Segal statue. And the Ron McRae had written the caption for the picture that at that time over 38,000 Madisonians were represented by an out gay elected, almost one quarter of the city population at the time was represented by someone who was out and gay.
Almost matching the population here.
No, I mean, really. It's pretty remarkable. That nearly 40,000 people were represented by someone who was out and gay. That's why all this nattering and chittering about, oh my God, Iowa passed gay marriage. Why are you people so worked up about that? We got through the nation's first gay rights law, you damn coasties.
Mm-hmm.
You know? We live in the world of practical fat people. We're good.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. Okay. Thank you very much.